designers and curious minds. Ever wondered about the stories hiding within your building's walls? I'm Carrie Seaburn, structural engineer and host of Unstruct, the podcast that decodes and simplifies major concepts of structural design. Behind the math and physics, structural engineering simply predicts building behavior. Join me as we simplify the complex, making structural design accessible to everyone.
Nowadays, instead of measuring it via cost, we're saying, well, what about carbon, you know? We've got two levers now that we can, if an architect has an inefficient design, we can hit them with two levers, if you like.
The official casualty figure is 55,000. Everybody I talked to told me that the actual figure is at least three times as much. And I believe that. I mean, seeing what I saw, Turkish codes are good, and they have been improving, but compliance was completely lacking.
Fluent in steel, concrete, masonry, and timber design, I'll bring you leading engineers to dissect the tales behind their building structure. Whether you're an architect, contractor, engineer, or just love a good story, this podcast is for you.
Yeah, beam penetrations. That's a fun topic on this project.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Unstruct. From within your walls, hear the story behind how your building stands today.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another mini episode here that we call She Builds Charrettes. On this mini episode, we are going to do a throwback to this past June when Lizzie and I were in San Francisco attending the A23, the AIA conference, live from the RCAT booth. It was great seeing a lot of faces that we've had only seen online. So to finally meet them in person, it was awesome. We got to hang out with our Gable Media family. And it was great to just hang out at the RCAT booth and record something for you guys. We had a great conversation with Sarah Collada from the Disrupt Symposium and Disrupt Magazine. So yeah, let's kick it to way back in June when we had this conversation.
All right, well,
okay,
we're here.
Yeah,
we are here. Two-thirds of She Builds podcast is live from the A23 Expo floor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's exciting not to be recording in a closet.
That's so true.
That's so true. So yeah, for those of you that don't know, my name is Jessica Rogers. I am based out of Miami, Florida, even though I'm here in San Francisco.
I mean, that's where you live, right?
Yeah. Besides doing She Builds podcast, I am the studio manager of a small firm in Miami, Florida. And I'm joined by my fellow co-host, Lizzie Rahr.
Yeah, I'm Lizzie Rahr. I actually live in San Francisco, so not too far from home for me to travel. I work at a small architecture firm up in Marin County. We do mostly residential, single-family residential. So, but today we're here for our side hustle.
Yes, our passion project.
Yes. For She Builds podcast. So some background on the show. We are a podcast. We're telling the untold stories of women in the AEC industry through history. And the way the show started, our third co-host couldn't join us, Mirjiti Rivas. She's in Houston, Texas. We're missing her, but it was her brainchild. Mm-hmm. She was looking for this podcast, right? She loves history. She wanted to find a podcast about women in history and architecture and couldn't find it. So she's like pitching the idea to a friend of hers. And he was like, that sounds more like a limited series. Like, I don't know if you could make a whole show about that. And she's like, well, challenge accepted. Now I have to do it. And so she reached out to Jessica and I each, and we
separately.
Both separately. Yeah. And we both said yes. And so, yeah,
here we are.
Here we are. 3 years later, we've been doing this.
Yeah. And then what I would like to give a shout out to is Mark and Demetrius. They've been great supporters of us since the beginning.
Yeah.
And through their support, we were able to be a part of Gable Media.
Yeah.
Which has been amazing. It has opened so many doors, hence why we're here.
Yeah.
Through them, we've got to have amazing experiences, meeting several people. We're here at the RCAP booth.
Mm-hmm.
We're here at conference getting to meet the rest of our Gable Media family.
Yeah, for the first time in person.
For the first time in person, like Charisse from Detailed Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. It's great. I love that we're finally getting to meet people IRL.
Yeah, it's been really good. Yeah, we're just excited to share more about the show and meet more people, like Jessica was saying. So,
and the fact that we're at conference, so the other part of our show is we tell the untold stories, but we also have a segment where we call the Caryatid.
Yeah.
So Lizzie, you have a good, that was actually your brainchild. Like, I think I had the brainchild, like the idea of what
of, like,
I wanted.
Yeah, what did you say? Like giving them their flowers while they're still
alive
to smell them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you came up with the actual term. Or like found the term.
Well, because I was like, I feel like of the three of us, I remember my architectural history probably the most.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I was just remembering the Caryatid was the, you know, the stone column shaped like a woman in Greek architecture. And so the idea is that the Caryatid is a woman who's alive, working today, who ties into the historical woman of the episode, but who's holding up the profession just like a Caryatid does the roof of a Greek style building, right?
Exactly. So that's what makes attending conference so cool, because we are basically witnessing these living legends in our minds. We're getting to meet them. We're getting to hear them speak. So for example, we are on day two, but day one keynote was Barbara Boozer, who was the Caryatid of our episode 62 lady.
Ruth Shellhorn.
So the connection between the both of them is that they both designed theme parks.
Well, for Disney specifically,
Yeah.
Ruth Shellhorn was a landscape architect who helped design the pathways of Disneyland in Anaheim. So,
yeah. So just having that ability to like see and hear these Caryatids in person has been great. After us, Nikita Reed from Tangible Remnants is gonna be doing her live broadcasting, and she was also a Caryatid of our show, and she's a friend. We've been on her show. She's amazing. But her work on historic preservation was the key in to one of our episodes that we did on a woman that did historic preservation as well. So to have these connections is so great, and that's what makes being a part of this so much more fun.
I know. We've just had, and all the connections we're making too with like listeners or other people that we've met over the last day or so is like we met the people from Coffee Sketch at the Entree Architect meetup last night.
Michiganders, fellow Michiganders,
which is like always a way to my heart. You know, if somebody comes up and shows me their hand and where they're from, I'm like obviously endeared to them. So
yes, we're learning more than just ladies. We're learning about Michigan's geography. Like, what? That's crazy. So that's good. So if you are around,
come find us.
Come find us. Meeting the guys from the Coffee Sketch podcast was great, but also listening or meeting people that are listeners of our show is always great.
That was really fun last night.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we record in our closets. We only see the three of our faces on screen.
Yeah.
So besides like our parents that listen to the show, it's great to like meet other people outside of our family.
Yeah, who like recognize the show and our fans. So it's been really good.
It's been really good. And then, you know, we're here at conference and they talk about a lot of things that resonate with some of the themes and discussions from our show.
Yeah.
That's been really interesting. You know, we've some of the sessions that Lizzie and I have attended has been focused on like women leadership and women entrepreneurs and all things like that, that we've dedicated seasons to on our show talking about it. And the one that I think resonated with us from, I think it was the CEO Lakeisha Woods mentioned it during her opening keynote, was about alternative careers. Mm-hmm. We had a season of like the non-architects.
Yeah.
And how they contributed to architecture, which is very much in line with the alternative career paths. Mm-hmm. I mean, I myself consider myself in an alternative career space. Yeah. So it was good to see that conversation come up at conference. Mm-hmm. And what I love about now that we're here is that we got to meet a lot of amazing people, a lot of amazing women. Mm-hmm. One being someone that we're actually gonna bring in, a charrette of sorts, since we, you know, don't typically do a lot of interviews, but we're really excited to have Sarah Colata from Disrupt Magazine and Disrupt Symposium. She herself identifies as an alternative career type person. So I would like to bring you on and introduce yourself. Tell us what you do.
Yeah.
Tell us how excited Sarah. You are.
Thank you so much. Yeah. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. And I love your project and I love Gable Media. And it's just exciting to, well, first and foremost, share drinks with everyone last night. Yes. That was wonderful. And share ideas and inspirations from this 2 days of the conference. And also join here to talk a little bit about projects and women and leadership.
Yeah, exactly. Tell us like a little bit about your path and how you ended up where you are, you know, and in this alternative path.
Sure. So I am an architect. Mm-hmm. I graduated from Central St. Martin's in London. And shortly after graduation, I went to China to work for an architectural practice. And I didn't really quite like the experience. Mm-hmm. I always considered design to be more creative than just the CAD. But unfortunately, when you're an intern, they put you on the,
on the
2D, 3D stuff. And there were some things that I didn't like generally about the office culture and that specific experience. And I wanted to do something a little bit more meaningful. Mm-hmm. And humanitarian architecture called me. So I decided to get a job at a local charity in Guatemala.
Okay.
So I moved from China to Guatemala and started working there. Mm-hmm. They were doing some projects, school projects, but building a lot with concrete. And at the time, you know, raising money in America and spending it on building materials. Most of the building suppliers there were actually American owned. So the economy would circulate back to America, therefore not
instead
really.
Instead of Guatemala.
Yeah, not really impacting, you know, economically the local community. Well, an alternative then would be to hire local people and maybe build with natural materials. Mm-hmm. Around adobe is very popular. They also do a lot of stone buildings, and you know, and then really the craftsmen can earn that income, right?
Yeah.
So I was trying to introduce these ideas, but being young, you know, they kind of overlooked it. And at that point, I just got very frustrated. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to do it all on my own. So mm-hmm. I started to fundraise for projects and found obviously a lot of need. And we started to build. 6 years on, I hit about, I hit 30. And I have built projects in Guatemala and run the charity. We also picked up some private projects. It was a really great experience. Mm-hmm. In my 20s. But I did find myself broke, and that was hard. It really was.
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, what do you do? Coming back to Europe, trying to get a job in a normal architectural firm with a portfolio full of mud houses and bamboo buildings.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it just made me feel really on the outside and not belonging. And I needed to think quickly on my feet. And I thought, you know what? I am an entrepreneur. I have that sort of boldness and courage to start projects and just do things that that I believe in and follow my heart. But I don't have the skills. So I started to study business and marketing, came to America. And that really was the beginning of the path I'm on today, which made me realize that, you know, we don't learn business in school.
No.
And so, you know, how do you deal with that? And I realized that my experience wasn't, you know, unique. A lot of people that start practices struggle, and I could only imagine how, you know, the struggle and how great that is in San Francisco, London, or any other metropolis.
Yeah.
So when Corona hit, I decided to start a blog, and I was writing about these topics of business of architecture, what I found from business, marketing, etc. And then I started a podcast as well, Architecture Talk Tank, where we interview people about business, architects that run companies, as well as really the greater AEC industry professionals, about marketing, and a lot of people that help architects develop businesses and business skills. And so we covered a lot of topics now on the third season as well, doing this 2 years. But last year, I decided to put together an event, and that was the Swap Symposium. We did it virtually because it was still kind of in the end of pandemic time, but you know. So we did that, and it was very successful. We had a really great show up rate, and we actually collaborated with huge offices as well. Gensler, SOM, you know, we had really just incredible firms join us, and some people as well that were the movers and the shakers of the metaverse industry, which this topic is massive last year. Now AI took over.
I feel like that is one of the big topics
today. So anyway, so we did that, and actually now it's literally a year in, and we did 7 events, 6 virtual and 1 physical. And actually, we do have a woman edition, 8th of March, which was a full day stream, and we had 15 speakers. And that was really beautiful. I absolutely love this project.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is me.
Wow.
That sounds so cool.
I know. And I feel like I just see there's a lot of connections, I feel like, with your story and like some of the story and the stories we tell in our show about these women. Like, I think none of these are new things that people are going through, right? Like you were saying. Right. And like, I think a lot of people find themselves frustrated with the traditional path in architecture and things like that. Or, and especially women, like we find that a lot on our show, whether that's because like historically they had a hard time getting into the profession because they're women. Or other factors and that kind of thing. And so they'll choose to go out on their own and start their own thing because no one else is like giving them those opportunities, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's how we started our podcast. It's, saw something, we saw a gap.
Right.
And we wanted to do something about it.
Yeah, exactly.
And we started our podcast during the Corona pandemic.
And I love it actually, because the pandemic, you know, putting us sort of enclosed in our houses forced us to think outside of the box and find time for things that maybe were in the pipeline or maybe connected to passion.
Yeah.
And we also needed to connect with one another. And I think that, you know, meeting on a weekly or whatever frequency with people you're developing relationships with and chatting about things you're interested in. It's beautiful. And you know,
and that's being, like, life-giving in its own way, right?
It gave us something to do.
Except
for baking bread. Everybody else is doing. There was something that you mentioned too about your time in Guatemala building mud architecture. That was really cool because we talked on our show about a lady that did mud architecture.
So Revati Kamati in India, she was our episode 56 lady, and she had a real heart for promoting mud architecture because, like, similar to what you were saying, and she was like, I think people associate mud architecture with
poverty.
Impoverished communities, and like that it's sort of like a lesser material. And she was like, no, mud architecture can be really beautiful and sustainable and create really awesome projects. And so she did a lot of, like, you know, hotels and like higher end buildings that used mud.
Amazing.
And those materials, and really promoted that. And so I totally, when you were talking about your story, I was like, oh, that's like a perfect connection to her.
And
so,
since you have a lot of people listening that are passionate about history, you know, I just want to add a few cents to that, because Industrial Revolution happened about 100 years ago.
Right.
And before that, literally every single building was built with natural materials. Then we discovered steel and concrete and started to create building regulations to build with that, because obviously there was a much more dangerous way to build. And so we needed to follow some regulations. But ever since they developed those regulations, they called everything else alternative. And that is just a funny twist on it. Like, how is this alternative?
When it's the original.
What's original. And then also, really today, because the knowledge has died, because we didn't put effort to preserve that knowledge,
to keep
it actually is alternative, because we no longer longer know how to do it properly. Right. And so part of what we were doing with Tribe Lab in Guatemala was actually going to these indigenous communities and finding people that still remembered how to build.
And like getting that knowledge from them to then pass on.
And it was a very humbling experience for the architects, because you come in and you say, okay, well, our role is just to put that better layer, right? To think put the design in. But really the technique came from the local man that's still new. You know, it's really funny. When you walk around these villages today, you'll find, you know, people are over 50, 60-year-old that know, but the youth doesn't anymore. They do know how to build with concrete building, but they won't.
So they're not passing it on either, really.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's really dying around the world, that knowledge.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is why we have our show.
Yeah.
For that reason, to keep these stories going.
Right.
Trying to spread these messages as far as we can. Because at the end, it's enriching the profession. It's moving it forward, even if it is looking back. Mm-hmm. Which I think is the beauty of our show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Looking at the past so that we can move forward in all aspects. Like, we tell the stories of women, but we're also talking about the architecture, the mechanics of the built environment and those elements. Mm-hmm. So I think it's beautiful, the work that you were doing.
Yeah. And I really think, you know, coming back to, you know, sort of topics that we talk a lot about now, entrepreneurship, women leadership, and business, it's really all about what it comes down to is passion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as an architect, there's surely something for everyone that we're passionate about. We can identify that gap, right?
Yes.
That we feel we can fill somehow. And for me, my early days, it was very much that story of preserving the indigenous ways of building. Mm-hmm. Today, it's talking about following your heart and passion. And but in one way or another, no matter even when that changes, and it doesn't always die out, you still care about things you cared about before.
Right. Yeah.
And I just think that, you know, the key of it is to follow your heart.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, what you were saying is like finding your passion and that kind of thing. In one of the sessions we were at yesterday, the women at the helm, they were taught, like, it was about women in leadership and talking about like, well, someone said like, what's your superpower, or like, what's your value add, right, and that kind of thing. Because I do think, and I think that also relates back to like alternative pathways in architecture too, because like, your strength might not be in the typical pathway, but like, you can still add to the profession by like going a different way and like, figuring out what you have to offer and like what you're passionate about and how you can use that to push the profession forward.
And actually, this is super interesting that you said that, because something that I'm starting to realize now, I'm 35, actually 36. Oh my God. And 3 days ago, I turned 36.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. It still didn't click in, obviously. So much going on here.
It takes a while.
Yeah. Anyway, 36. But I'm realizing that sometimes when you try to like design your life through your head, which is not following your passion, but trying to be logical about what you're doing,
right?
It ends up being like a design thing which maybe you just won't connect with. And what I realized is, you know, hey, I'm not doing architecture right now. I'm doing media for architects. Right. I'm still in the same community. I'm still following that path of architecture. I'm very passionately committed to this community.
Yeah.
But actually, my role changed. And I always find it really weird when people address me as like an alternative path, because I still identify with being an architect. It's just that I don't practice that today. And that's interesting. And why? Because somehow I follow that passion. And then that sort of title changed along the way. But I don't think that's an issue as long as you are fulfilled. And so that's something important, and I think that's been a great lesson for me. I love sharing.
Girlfriend, me and you are like right here.
Jessica exactly. Also, I feel like, is
because I love this industry. I love design. I love everything about it, but I've always thought of like, I'm not so much interested in the practice of architecture, but of the architect. And how do we like work with that? How do we do that? So media is definitely something that I've been interested in. Our podcast is, I guess, it's helped me a lot define what it was that I like to do and like what are the things that I am passionate about. And because of the show, we were able to talk about things that were important to us in the industry, things that we wanted to see different. Diversity and inclusion is one that we are very passionate about, not just learning about American, European traditional architecture, but all kinds of architecture. That's why when we had that story about mud architecture, it was like, yes, finally, we're talking about this. And it's alternative careers. I understand what you're saying. I mean, we had a whole season where we just talked about non-architects, because mm-hmm. what other architects fail to realize is that there's so many people that have influenced our industry and our mm-hmm. profession that had nothing to do with
traditionally as architects. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I hope that helps promote that, like, architecture can be very welcoming
mm-hmm. and collaborative. And like, I think that's kind of like, I just always think about Florence Nightingale and, like, mm-hmm. you know, she's so well known for being a nurse, but, like, she influenced hospital design in such a dramatic way.
Yeah.
That, like, things that are normal for healthcare architecture today are because of her.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like, she wasn't trained as an architect, but bringing in that knowledge from other people mm-hmm. and, like, making connections is super important.
And you know what's really encouraging as well is that as architects, we learn certain skills mm-hmm. that actually can translate very well to other things.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
so when you break it down, for example, what we do is we will get a brief, right, from a client, whatever it is, and we'll sit down and start envisioning and creating these big visions. And then everything else is just a system that we need to implement to bring that vision to life. That's exactly what it's like to create a business. Mm-hmm. It's exactly what it's like. And it's very funny that actually we have such a wound in the industry around being able to be entrepreneurial and more business focused, because in fact, if you compare business studies, it's just a set of systems that you need to go through, right, in order to set this entity right, and
the skills translate, but people aren't, like,
incredibly
using them that
but
way.
I think also our belief system around the fact that we're not good at it, right, it stops us from acknowledging that if we just allowed ourselves, we would be probably great at it. And so that's also a very interesting thing that kind of touches on that topic of out of architecture or anything to do with alternative careers, because we are actually well skilled to do a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah. And I think that's true too, because in some ways they do teach us, like, as an architect, you sort of have to be a generalist, right? Like, you have to, because in order to design different types of buildings, you have to learn about that, you know, so you end up kind of having a wide knowledge about a variety of different buildings and uses and different careers, like who's using the space, right?
Right.
But I feel like that doesn't get exactly what you were saying. Like, they don't talk about it in the sense of, like, how to use your skills outside of, like, traditional architecture and design and that kind of thing.
Is that where the name of your symposium and magazine comes from, Disrupt?
Do you know what? It's really interesting. When I was doing the first edition, mm-hmm. I thought I'm going to call it something different. I can't even remember now. It was some long, long name and then an abbreviation of that. And then, you know, I invited all these amazing people. We had 25 speakers on the first edition.
Yeah.
So there was just a lot of interviews and I was speaking to everyone on Zoom and then recording that and creating articles on the back of these interviews and everything. So it's like really deep dived. And people kept mentioning the word disruptive and disrupt a lot in this. And I just kept, in all my notes, I kept highlighting that somehow.
Yeah.
And eventually I thought, wow, this really stands out. And that's kind of how it happened. I didn't even realize that this word was used a lot already through content creation and architecture and other things. But I really connect with it. And I like how people react to it too. Mm-hmm. Because I think we are doing something disruptive and people, you know, have always this feedback, like, we do really need this right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, and they do want to be disruptors. Even yesterday, we were walking down the street and we actually ran the red light, walking, not in the car.
Oh, okay.
And we said, hey, we're disruptors. It's fine.
It's on theme.
It's funny.
It's on brand.
We're just staying on brand.
We're staying on brand.
I love it. That's so great. Yeah, the term disrupt, right? I feel like you get one or two reactions, the ones that are like, for it, the ones that are risk averse, that are like, ooh, I don't know if we want to do that. But we are all about the disruption, changing the game. We do it through history and storytelling.
Yeah.
Because
I think for us, like, a goal of ours is to, you know, eventually maybe the podcast becomes some sort of in education spheres. I think that's kind of one of the places that we're looking to maybe be disruptive is
right.
Because I think part of the reason too that we wanted to start this podcast is, like, our architectural history classes and things like that, they didn't teach us anything about these women and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and so
I'm still in the dark, honestly.
I was going to ask you, like, okay, you went to architecture school. I assume you took architectural history classes.
Did you learn about any women, or could you name just any
styles, architectural styles and stuff like this, but never so much about women? I mean, of course, we had, and back in the day, Zaha Hadid was still alive, but we had those influences of those sort of star architects that we compared a lot, the concepts and the programming and the, well, you know, contextual, all these things that like mean something to us, but nothing to anyone outside of our industry. And there was always a name attached, and, you know, we studied the style of Rem Koolhaas and Zaha and this and that. But I honestly, outside of historical names such as Le Corbusier, I don't, you know, I don't know stories of women. And I think what you guys are doing is amazing, also for the reason that it's a way for us to relax listening to this. This isn't another way to be, you know, a great person or show up in the world or learn. It's more like, oh, I'm gonna just like kick back, have a tea and listen to this podcast.
Well, we tried to spill the tea. Girl, we could tell you about Le Corbusier, but we don't have time, because we have like probably like 5 to 10 episodes of how Le Corbusier ain't crap, and there was actually a woman behind a lot of his most notable projects.
Yeah,
but we're not gonna get into that, because
I just wish I had like a cup to make a noise with.
I'm loving this conversation. I'm glad that we get to learn a little bit more about what you've learned and or the gaps, because one of the gaps that you just mentioned and that we've talked about earlier is that architects don't know the business side of handling that. So that's what makes it so interesting, the work that you do about trying to teach other architects and designers and just learning within ourselves, because, you know, She Builds Podcast is a business as well. So we're learning along the way.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. And that's great. You know, like, I feel like life is business. I mean, don't you sell yourself to friendships and boyfriends and, I mean, all the time, right? Just the way you show up in the world is the constant sale. but you know what? I think what's important is that we give some percentage. I say 10. That's why my rule. The percentage to actually constantly grow. If you don't grow, you do slowly decline. And I think especially if you have ambitions to be a good leader, even if you're already in a leadership role. You know, I'm interviewing a lot of older architects that have a lot to teach us actually about the industry. Patrick McLeamy being one. In fact, Build Smart is also the Gable Media podcast, so you can guys check him out. But I've deep dived into this podcast and just so inspired by his authenticity and an ability to actually say, you know, oh yeah, there were days when I was more on the aggressive side and I was a little bit full of myself. And then I did coaching with an executive coach, you know, and I've learned how to manage that. And therefore that led me to being promoted. And I love that, because it's that humbleness that you don't really get often. Unless people get to that point to realize that, yeah, actually what made me a great person today is that I've grown, and maybe I wasn't the best version of myself a few years back, but here I am today and what I went through. And it was really super interesting when you guys talked before, when we were preparing for this podcast, you said, you know, we talk a lot about success, but we never know how people got there, right? How? And I think it's by learning a lot, reading books, listening to educational podcasts, asking the right questions, and just wanting, having that willingness and curiosity to grow.
Yeah, exactly. Like an openness to learn. And like, I mean, that's what we hope that our listeners will take is, you know, like an openness to just sort of like maybe relearn about Chandigarh and like other historic projects and just, that's, I think, exactly what you were saying. Just like openness to curiosity and to kind of reframing how you might be thinking about something, and even self-awareness of how you are interacting with others.
That's right.
We were talking about before that like everything is so much about like how you're communicating. Like you can't be a good leader unless you're able to communicate well, both with like clients or employees and that kind of thing. Because otherwise, like, you won't be a good manager if you can't communicate your ideas and like listen to people.
people. Yeah. And actually, speaking to that, I went to one of the lectures here in the lecture room upstairs, and they were talking to emotional intelligence. It's just an incredible training. They picked up leaders. They would ask, you know, who's managing a practice right now?
Yeah.
Who's a principal? Who's a director? People were raising their hands like, come on stage, and then put them through a really challenging situation. Yeah, like, you know, like, here is this employee coming in offended because someone called them gay. And it's like, you know, what do I do? And I don't want to work here. I don't want to work with this person screaming and shouting and this. And they were really put on the spot on the stage in front of all
these
people.
Like, how would you address
this? And you know what? It was interesting because they were reacting. And actually, I did find that there was a lot of very good ways to get out of those situations. I was impressed by how people did.
Yeah.
But also it's a really great learning curve because you put out, like, if they're uncomfortable, you're uncomfortable, and then that really puts you, forces you to pay attention.
Yeah.
And it was very impactful. I actually learned a lot and connected with the person that ran it. And I hope actually to put him on the stage at this wrap because that's exactly the type of training we need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow, that sounds really intense. It and was, also very
and
interesting.
It was super
very
fun, actually. Because no, like, it was, yeah, it was so managed such that obviously it was entertaining. But I really learned a lot. And in fact, I'm taking a mental note to go back and read a little bit more about emotional intelligence because I think that's, it's very interesting. And I think that we never should stop developing that intelligence.
For sure.
That fruit growing in that on that level in that respect.
All right. So, Sarah, would you like to play a game?
Oh my God, go on.
Okay. So this is similar to at the end of each season, we do like a little wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
And in our wrap up, we play a little game based on our ladies. Like, who would you rather, you know, go have tea with? Mm-hmm. Who would you rather go to a bar?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who would you? So, for today, we are going to do a little game on who would you rather, but conference edition.
Okay. I like that.
Okay. So, who would you like to see a keynote, see a workshop, or go reception hopping, aka like bar hopping, like last night? So, those three categories, who would you choose? Your choices are Zaha Hadid. Let's do current. So Barbara Boozer.
Mm-hmm.
And let's do Lily Reich, who is the furniture designer of the Barcelona Pavilion.
Okay, interesting.
It is hard.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, you know, I had an opportunity to meet Zaha once.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, AA, obviously Architectural Association.
Yeah.
Not the Anonymous Alcoholics, which would be hilarious.
Not to be confused.
Not to be confused. She obviously graduated that school and she used to come kind of unannounced, but when she was there, obviously the word would spread through London architecture groups very quickly. And I remember we got a message. We were at Central St. Martin's, normally like at a lecture, and we got a message that she's there at Architectural Association, which is just down the road in Bedford Square. And I actually like left half lecture and I was like, some people came with me and we went in, and it was just a very, very small gathering. And she was talking about drawing and she was pulling out some of her old drawings and showing us the ideas, and kind of she said something along the lines of, sometimes I draw and, you know, this drawing, I like it, but I can't really use it as a building right now. So I put it in the shelf and wait. And then when the right project comes along, we use that and design that into a building.
Oh, that's really interesting.
That's really cool. See, hoarding works for that reason.
Yes. We should talk to Julia Morgan about that.
We don't have time for that.
But, you know, generally speaking, Zaha, I don't think she was the kindest person in the room. And I'm not sure if I would enjoy a cocktail with her so much.
Okay.
Maybe I would feel awkward. Interior design. Yeah. Mm. What was her name?
Lily Reich.
Lily Reich. Mm-hmm.
She would be cool. Barcelona,
I would go for that.
Chair,
yeah.
Barcelona Pavilion. That is all her. So.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I would do that. And I love the style. And I also think that, interior designers, they kind of do something that a lot of architects don't like to do so much, the detailing. Yeah. But I really enjoy it because it makes the building really come alive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I actually find myself following more interior designers and architects on Instagram, for example, for that very
same.
Matter.
Yeah, same.
So, I think I would choose her.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Interesting. Okay. So I know that's the game of Would You Rather, but trivia. Do you know who was the first woman to design a museum in the United States?
Oh my God.
I mean, not to give you the answer, but you were just talking about her.
Ooh, really? Zaha. Mm-hmm. Yes. Ooh, the first woman to design a museum.
Oh. Yeah, Zaha Hadid was the first woman to design a museum in the United States. She designed the Cincinnati Museum of Art in Ohio, which is crazy because Zaha, like, you got to meet her live.
Yeah, no, like, it's not that long ago.
It's not that long ago.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Jessica, who would you choose?
What would the choices were? Lecture?
Like either a keynote or a lecture or have a drink with.
Okay, so I know Zaha is a diva, but... Okay, well, actually, okay. Zaha, I'll do the lecture.
I feel like she'd be a good lecturer.
Right? I have been dying to meet Barbara Boozer again in person, and I've been so close to having that drink with her that I'm going to have that drink with her.
That's right.
Sounds good. I think that's going to come to life. It's going to happen.
One can hope.
And then I want a workshop with Lily Reich so that we can get into those details.
Oh, yeah.
I want to know about the book matching. I want to know about her work with marble. She used to do, like, a whole bunch of, like, fabrication of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also, while I'm doing the workshop, I can get the tea on Mies van der Rohe, because that's another story.
That's a whole,
we tell her story, sure. We have to mention this fool. I mean, man. Okay, so Lizzie, why don't I ask you? This lady. Okay, so tea party, professional luncheon, or after party rager. Which one are you going to and why?
With which lady, or like pick any lady to
pick
go?
Pick any lady.
Okay. Well, I think I would have to choose Emily Helen Butterfield.
Okay.
For the business luncheon, because she helped start the Detroit Women's Business Leader Group.
I forget the episode, Sarah.
Yes. Yeah.
It was very fascinating.
I forget the exact name of it, but she started, like a women's luncheon, because at the time, there were men had like luncheon clubs that they would go and like talk business at. And so she's like, well, we should have one for women.
Yeah.
So, and so she started one in Detroit, and it kind of became the model for like future business clubs and that kind of thing. So, so I would do that with her. Dorothy Draper for the tea party.
Dorothy Draper was the richest little girl
in the world.
In the world.
Yeah. When she, like, her father died and left her a bunch of money.
Oh, wow.
She started, like, a business after that of interior design.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's an interior designer. And
I love this. Uh-huh. You actually get the type of money you don't have to do anything in your life with anymore. And you do actually choose to do something.
Yeah.
You choose something that we're doing in life, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Based out of New York.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she was born in Tuxedo Park.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Which sounds exactly.
Sounds fancy.
Yeah. I mean, the richest little girl in the world. she would be good for tea parties because when you think of like New York architecture and of residential architecture, how they have that like salon.
Mm, oh, yeah.
That was all Dorothy Draper. Mm. She was the one that like expanded so that she could have entertainment with her friends. Hundreds of her closest friends could gather. Like, think Great Gatsby style.
Yes, you know? Yes, of course. I'm right there.
Yeah. So, a tea party, I'd go to that.
Lot of teacup clinking.
Yes. While they spill the tea.
Right.
Yeah. And,
The rager. So, who would you rage with?
Well, I think Aline Saarinen would be great. She's, like, got all the media connections and stuff like that. So, this is Eero Saarinen's second wife. And she was, like, she basically started the profession of, like, architectural marketing, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she was originally in media and, like, on TV and stuff like that, but then started to help promote his business. That's once they were...
What year was this, more or less?
This was like 70s.
Wow.
Yeah, the 1970s.
What's really interesting about this is that in America, at some point around then, it was illegal for architects to market.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Game change. What?
Yeah. Yeah. Look it up. It's
so
crazy.
Was Aline the disruptor of the
well, she was. So it sounds. Industry. That's why I asked for a year, because I was absolutely gobsmacked when I found out about this.
Interesting.
And it actually makes a lot of sense, because if that's the history of business of architecture, then how are we supposed to know how to market ourselves if historically,
like, we were never allowed to.
We were not allowed to.
This is probably like the biggest epiphany, because that's something that architects face. How to market themselves.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah, that's one of the issues.
Yeah.
For sure.
And that's why, because if we had to start like in the 70s, 80s or whatever.
Well, we don't have a massive story, history around it, and experience for sure.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, like, we tell the stories of historic women and we're learning, but we're learning so much more.
We learned so much that, like, the other one that I always think of that blew my mind was, so Florence Knoll is like, was basically the design force behind Knoll Furniture. It was like her husband's company, but then when they got married, she came on as a partner, and
she was the business leader brain behind it.
She was like and she had all these connections. She was trained as an architect and was like, had been like sort of adopted by the Saarinens. So she had all these connections with architects and was instrumental in bringing them in to design furniture for Knoll. So like the chairs that Saarinen and Harry Bertoia did, like that was through her connections.
I love that.
But the thing that always, and she like ran their interior design department, because they're also known for like their corporate interiors, and that was definitely like her brainchild. But she started doing like sample boards, or like what she called like paste-ups, of like, so putting like a rendering and then putting the materials around it, because they were like very minimalist designs for the time. And so she was like, I feel like they won't understand like the type of fabric unless I put it on there. But and like swatches, because she got very into like bringing in textile designers. So like the reason we have swatches and like do material board, like that was never a thing before her.
Okay. Can we pause on that? Because where are we in a place that has all the swatches and materials?
Literally what we're are surrounded
just by swatches everywhere.
Also, I wonder if Knoll is here so we can tell them about themselves, about this history.
Tell them about themselves.
Yeah, this two episode, like, did you know?
Shout out.
That it was. Do you know about Florence Knoll? Even though you're but I'm curious. I don't know if I've seen the Knoll booth, if there is one.
I haven't seen anything.
But we gotta see it, and then we gotta like
it's
tell
so
them
big,
to listen
you know?
To
Yeah.
As we talk about them. But that was a great episode.
I think it might have gotten bought though, so I don't know. But like,
but it's Knoll something.
It's like within the
But yeah, that's
anyway. But that's the thing, like things that you think are just totally standard. Like, and then we're finding out that these women were instrumental in that. So
incredible.
It's really, really fun.
I love this.
Yeah.
Oh. So inspired. Wow.
All right. So, Sarah, what's next for you and Disrupt? And
gosh.
All that. What do you envision for the magazine? Let's start there.
Yeah, we do actually want to go to print, and everyone's making faces when I say it, because apparently magazines are not that trendy and it's not the best business to get into. But you know what? We want to build a community, and it's very much about this idea of just having something that you can come out of an event with, that you can keep for yourself. And it's so beautifully printed like a book.
Yeah.
And I really believe in that sort of thing where you can put it on the coffee table and it looks good in your interior.
Yeah.
And on top of it, you can learn about business and leadership from all these top leaders that are currently in different positions at this amazing firm. So, you know, that's kind of the ambition there. And we're going to distribute it definitely within our own community. But, you know, I'm open to see where else this business can go. Yesterday, I was talking to printers, their book publishers in here.
Oh, yeah. We'd love to do a book.
Yeah.
Okay, putting it out there in the world if anyone's listening.
Yes. Well, they're there. You should talk to me.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
But yeah, no, I mean, let's see. Honestly, it's kind of my ambitions with visions, and then it materializes. Sometimes things fail. Sometimes they don't.
But you got to try.
You do.
Yeah.
You do.
You
and
try.
Not take it personally, you know, at the end of the day. It's just, transitioning from one thing to another. They're projects.
Yeah.
And
see what sticks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why we're here. You
absolutely.
Got Disrupt. We got our podcast. We're here live broadcasting. Yeah. Just trying things. Yeah. Without trying a script and out of the closet.
Absolutely.
Oh, this has been so great. This has been so fun.
Yeah.
So, Sarah, where can people follow you and follow your work?
Pretty much anywhere. Sarah Colata, K-O-L-A-T-A, and Sarah without an H.
Sarah without an H.
Pretty simple. LinkedIn is probably the best, but, you know, I do also have an Instagram and Facebook and connecting with the community on all these platforms.
Nice.
We are all about the connecting with the community.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You can follow us at She Builds Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, She Builds Pod on Twitter. Especially following us along during this AIA conference has been really fun.
Yeah.
Even though it's just the two of us, shout out to our homegirl Nerjadine, who's not here.
We miss you.
But we're documenting everything for her and for everyone. And we want to just meet everybody and make these connections and learning about everything that the women around us are doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're so happy that you're here.
Thank you. Yeah. For inviting me.
And that we got to meet outside of the DM.
I know, exactly. We talked on Instagram ages ago.
I saw that. And I was like, oh my gosh.
No, it's been that long.
It's been that long.
Yes.
But yeah, this has been great. This has been fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming and chatting with us.
Yes,
and for playing our little game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. That was fun.
Yes. All right.
Any last thoughts, Jessica?
Well, why don't we pitch our what we're working on?
For the new season?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. So we're working on season
9.
Wow. 9. Wow. Wild. Yes. And the theme for this upcoming season. So yeah, we do about 10 episodes every season. We like to we give ourselves parameters by picking a theme.
Right.
So like that the women have to kind of fall under.
Giving ourselves bumpers. Because we can just go.
They could go anywhere.
Anywhere.
But it's also fun because then we try to see like what connections we can find between the different stories of the women.
Mm-hmm.
And so this upcoming season is going to be inventors.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, it's pretty broad, but we're excited to see kind of what stories we come up with or find. So
some of it is directly tied to the industry. So a lot of like products that we use, like fire escapes invented by a woman, spoiler alert.
Yep.
And another is the technology aspect as well. Mm-hmm. Women that have influenced code, not like building code. We're talking computer electronic code. So I wonder if when we talk about the caryatids tied to that episode, if we'll bring up things like AI and metaverse and
absolutely
all of that stuff. So that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're in the research part of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what we have going on.
Yeah. We're excited about it. So
coming out
end of summer.
So
sometime August kind of time frame, but.
Yeah. I mean, until then, people can check us out on the socials. Be sure to check out Sarah and hers.
Yeah.
You know, while we disrupt this thing called the AEC industry one way or another.
Yeah, exactly.
Email
us, shebuildspodcast@gmail.com. Check out our website.
Ooh, buy our merch.
Yeah, we have merch on our website if you want to. We're wearing.
Swag out.
Yeah.
Yeah, see? We got our sweatshirts on.
I love the colors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We got a water bottle. We got stickers if you're here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're
pick up some.
On the floor, we got some stickers. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
So thanks for having us.
Yeah.
823 out.
Yes. So that was so cool. That was such a fun time to just meet everyone, to hang out, to talk to someone live in person. Special shout out to Sarah. It was great to actually like meet with her the night before at a little reception hangout that we did. And then to have her come on the show kind of spur of the moment to hang out with us was cool. And to see people walk in front of us while we're talking. That's not something typically that we do when we're recording in our closets. Yeah, this is great. I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you guys want to see more, you know where to go. Check us out at She Builds Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, She Builds Pod on X, formerly known as Twitter, or send us an email at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com. So until then, I believe we will have a new season coming to you very, very soon. So you make sure to stay tuned and watch out for us. Until then,
see y'all. Bye.
This is the outro, John.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.